Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back. And we are, this is still Constitution season. And we have been going through the Constitution. We're almost done with the Bill of Rights. Almost done with the Bill of Rights. We just landed, kind of wrapping up. But see, yesterday when Paul and I were talking about this, we kind of dived into the concept of what do we have to do to, you know, kind of cover many of these rights that we have today in their application because, well, Paul, welcome back.
Thank you.
So as we were talking yesterday, the Clearfield Doctrine, as they started redefining some of these fundamental rights, we have to go down and actually really clarify and really define at the county level what these rights really mean. And we can't make this really, you know, difficult. It has to be very simplistic. And so, in other words, what we have to do is we kind of have to grant government whatever authority that we think is best, and that is all they have. Because when we actually create these protections of, you know, privacy and those types of things, then it 100 years, 200 years, just as the framers debated this, it creates this dangerous well that government and political leaders and those engaged in law try to go down this path of, well, we think it means this. You know, because we didn't live 200 years ago, and it did. They didn't say this. They used these words. And we literally saw that in the Clearfield Doctrine. And so what we really need to do is, in our county constitutional conventions, we need to establish, and I was going down the path of creating even a more glorious Bill of Rights, but the trappings of doing that is that we can't list them all. And who knows where they go in the future when they have the ability to start reading your mind. Right. And you know, like the like Minority Report, actually predicting the future. We can't allow it to get that way, especially with artificial intelligence and all of these really dangerous technologies that are just around the corner. We need to make sure that, you know, it's almost like, are you a Star Trek fan?
Oh, I grew up with Star Trek, GR.
Okay, that's fine. Because then you understand there's a prime directive.
Yes.
And so that prime directive has to be very, very well clear and very well defined, that the rights of the people, because technically this Ninth Amendment is like the prime directive.
Right.
It's, and I'll repeat it again, folks, because it was yesterday. And those of you who are listening because of the, you know, the time, you may not be on air with us until the end of our show. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights in the Constitution, right? There's this enumeration of rights in the Bill of Rights and all these other amendments. So the enumeration in the Constitution of these rights that are enumerated, as it just said, shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. In other words, they didn't list them all. And you can't conclude that just because they didn't list them, you can't infringe upon them or abridge them.
Correct.
And so I honestly think that they did a good shot here. But maybe we need to look at trying to undo the Bill of Rights and actually go back and enumerate what we want our local government to do, what we want our local state to do, because what this will do is this will allow, you know, the progressive county like King County to create a true police state. or maybe not a true police state, because there'll still be those limitations and so forth that, you know, the rights of the people. But let's, you know, the thing that we were talking about is, you know, should we be able to monitor? Yeah, we want to be able to monitor criminals that we have a good, we can prove to a judge that this person needs to be monitored. We believe they've committed these crimes, and we believe that they're in the process of committing more crime. And so, okay, the judge signs off on that warrant. We need to actually enumerate what that is and then leave it there and say anything else. If it is not listed, such as searching property, anything else is restrained. In other words, you can't make up and redefine it in a couple hundred years that, you know, we think that, you know, that didn't include these open fields, how they redefined, they came up with something new and said, we believe this is what they meant, or they didn't mean this, they just meant this. Because,
well, dear,
go ahead.
You know what's been missing? What's been missing is the ratification debate.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, sure, but the ratification debate, see, the problem is that the ratification debates did not have the Bill of Rights. And so because it didn't go through the states directly, it went through Congress, then out to the states. What we have is a very limited documentation of the debates of the Bill of Rights in Congress, as you can see.
Right.
And the real documentation is, because I actually have the notes from the committee for the Bill of Rights. Mm-hmm. You know, that's available. And I actually, you have those because I believe I sent them to you as a part of my references. And
right.
So we have that, but that's still very limited because that's not a full official, you know, document of Madison said this, Sherman said this, you know, as they went through and pounded out what we call the Bill of Rights in the subcommittee.
Well, the other thing I think is that there wasn't a lot of argument because so many of the states really did want a Bill of Rights. You know, in the ratification debate.
Yes.
There was a lot of back and forth.
Yes.
In which anti-federalist arguments.
Well, yeah. You know, so, but even in the ratification debate, because actually we covered those this past mm-hmm. year. We covered what states submitted as their amendments. But when
sure.
you go through the ratification debates, it's clear that they kind of broke off in subcommittees and they didn't document those subcommittees as to what they were meaning by this and this. You
right.
remember?
Okay.
I mean, we yes. didn't read that.
Yeah,
we
did.
Just jumped right down. They went from the ratification, you know, process into this is what we've come up with mm-hmm. from the subcommittees. And so they didn't document that. And folks, this kind of goes to the divine hand of providence and just, I'll say, guiding and directing our forefathers to document this process so that at least we have these records that helps us come to, I will say, almost an absolute truth of what they were trying to do. And it just proves just how brilliant these men were and actually how truly inspired they were, because no man can, you know, come up with this stuff other than through inspiration. Because 9 times out of 10, when you leave it to men without the inspiration of God, it usually turns out to be a mess.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at the Articles of Confederation, the Articles of Association. You know, those two documents were failed because it wasn't, though there's no record of the, it's not that these people weren't religious and not that these people weren't praying. They didn't make the direct association and seek it. That was Benjamin Franklin's biggest contribution, is pointing out to the Convention for the Constitution that we need, I mean, as he points out, that a sparrow can fall from the sky and our Creator, it does not go unnoticed with our Creator. He notices all things. So what makes us think that we can create this nation without his help?
Right.
So, you know, they truly pursued his help in what to do. And we got the best governing document that has ever graced the face of this earth. Now, going forward, we need to cling on to and make sure we do those exact same things. But I believe moving forward, the design of enumerating what they can do is the important thing. And that's mm-hmm. and getting rid of, you know, this level of protection. I honestly believe we're at that point where states, as I kind of have, you know, argued this for a long time, that the states have always been the bad actors. The reason the states are the bad actors is because they have these liberties, because they have been granted by the county governments, you know, what they believe they possess are general powers. Even though they do have enumerated constitutions, they're out of control. And well, I believe, go ahead.
Wasn't it Madison who said that the power of the federal government is limited, but the states are unlimited? Something.
So actually, the 10th Amendment asserts that. So we haven't even covered that, but okay. And that's next.
All right.
But my point is that if we have county constitutions, and every county constitution, or I should say every county delegate that goes to the state constitution, ensures that a part of the state constitution, you know, is that line that all powers not delegated in this constitution as the 10th Amendment says, or is restricted from the counties. In other words, we want to make sure the counties can't do certain things like we have with the U.S. Constitution restraining the federal government from creating ex post facto laws and those types of things.
Sure.
And so we need to actually ensure that the county cannot create ex post facto laws, bills of attainder, and punishment. We want to make sure we actually add that word and punishment. Because it has been construed that, oh, well, the bills of attainder means only capital punishment. In other words, you can't create laws that kill people, but it's okay to create bills of punishment. And no, it's not okay. It was very clear that the framers meant both. But that all being said, when we create our new state constitution, the counties will insist that they inject that very particular line in every state constitution, reserving the powers of the people and their counties.
Right. So, you know, this is an interesting thing that I was thinking of. What was the population? Do you realize that the population of the United States at the time the Constitution was ratified, it was about 4 million people.
No, that's not true. Because there were slaves and everything else. I think the population, at best guess, was somewhere between 6 and 9 million. You know, that off the top of my head, I think it's somewhere between 6 to 9 million.
Okay.
And so because
the thing I looked up isn't correct.
At the time of the Civil War, there was an estimate of about 6 million slaves.
Wow. Okay. Well, the reason I brought this up is because let's say it's 6 to 9 million, okay? There's 6 million people in Missouri. You understand what I'm saying? So
in other words... So absolutely. I was already there with you. Because okay. When we look at the states are now at the size of the national level then.
Right.
And okay. We've already learned lessons that prove that we are not being represented when we have 100,000 people to one representative. That, you know, George Washington was absolutely right. I mean, as I have, because I mean no disrespect, you know, he wasn't the brilliance in law and the Constitution, those types of things, because he had a military mind and that's where his training was. But he had at least enough wisdom and understanding to know when it came down to representation that he could not fathom 40,000 people being able to be truly, more than 40,000 people being truly represented by one man or one person.
Right. Right.
And so why do we think that this one person can actually represent an entire state today? Like Wyoming has one representative in Congress. That is inadequate.
Correct.
And, you know, when they created in the Bill of Rights that amendment that still needs to be ratified that will contain the growth of the assembly or the growth of Congress or the House of Representatives specifically to one representative to only 50,000 citizens and no more, then I think they were right. We should cap it right there at 50. I still think that we have the ability to actually have better representation. The question is, folks, when we look at the type of work that they do and what we want them to do based on the federal constitution, we don't want them in our knickers to do all of these things. We want them to strictly be our buffer between us and the rest of the world. And let's keep in mind, if we live by the strategy that we've exposed through going through the ratification debates and going through the Constitution, that the UN has no place on this planet, that only the U.S. Constitution is God's plan for global governance, and that we actually should just basically disavow, remove the UN, and make a call out to the world. We're here to help everybody enjoy that all men, all mankind can enjoy liberty, individual liberty and individual sovereignty under our Constitution. It's just that you will have to go through we'll call it a term of cleansing or a term of transition, whatever people like to hear. But okay. Bottom line, you need to transition that you conform to the principles as well as the letter of the law of this Constitutional Republic. And as they come in, then we no longer have an enemy that we will act, because it will all be based on the rule of law. We will never need to pick up arms to settle our disagreements with this new state as we move forward.
Sure.
Never. I mean, this ends warfare as we know it.
Right.
Because it all moves everything down to the fundamental rights of the state, the fundamental rights of the people, and so forth. But this is why states of Islam can never come into the United States. They cannot become a state in the United States. And they are, and probably will be, perpetual enemies until probably either Christ comes or until the people realize that, this idea of communism or this religious communism under Islam of subjugation is inadequate. And it is absolutely, it is a fallacy. It's more of a concocted conspiracies superstition, if you know what I mean. If you really look at the origins and so forth. But anyway, there's a really good book out there, folks. The politically incorrect truth about Islam. I think it's Robert Spencer wrote it, something like that. But anyway, check it out. So here we are. I just wanted to close on the Ninth Amendment, that the only way we're really going to actualize that right there, that the enumeration of the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people, the only way we're going to actualize that is by actually having a state constitution or a rewrite of our state constitution via the establishment of county constitutions. Because now we have to shift everything back to truly our hands, to where it should be. As government started growing, we should have basically started everything at the origins of where our government begins, at our county level. Right. And today, we've kind of talked about this, but as we peel back the county, I honestly see that within the county, we should have districts. And maybe within the districts, because they're so populated. Come on, let's look at L.A. Because I talk about this. L.A., some of those districts should actually have their own constitutions.
Right.
That create a county constitution. Because I'm telling you, those people up in Lancaster who live, on the other side of the coastal mountains that are not in that valley, they have disparate needs. They have disparate interests, and it doesn't have anything to do with what's going on in Inglewood or, city center or what have you, or what they called South Central. Anyway, So we, you know, we got work to do, folks. If we're going to have a self-government, we have to keep it up.
Well, and in other words, there is a legitimate growth to government, and that is an increase in representation.
Right. Let's just go right back to the fundamentals of the Declaration of Independence. Governments are instituted by we the people. So we the people must constantly be involved in ensuring our government has the adequate energy necessary to do what it needs to do and ensure that it is constrained to only doing those things. And all of these people that want government to feed them and to wipe their butts and everything else, they either need to, you know, wake up or they need to be stripped of their citizenship.
Wow.
Because that idea of having our government doing things well beyond the limits of the Constitution and demanding that they do it without going through the constitutional process is absolutely unacceptable. And I'm here to tell you folks, there's no way these progressive states such as New York and California will ever be able to pervert this Constitution. This is because of the almighty creator who designed this thing through the three-fourths rule requiring three-fourths of the states. There's no way the heartland will ever allow the progressive states on the coast to do this to us. So they can't do it. Bottom line, it is required. We all must actually support the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. And those people who are domestic that call for, you know, these revolutionary ideas to basically bypass the Constitution and get rid of it, they should not be citizens. That's an insurrection. We can't call it any other way. And, you know, we have this, oh, well, you have a right to free speech. Yes, you can say what you want, but when you actually start calling and creating an activist movement and demanding noncompliance to bypass the Constitution, how is that not an insurrection, Paul? Seriously, how is that not an insurrection?
Well, if you're calling to bypass the Constitution, I don't see how it wouldn't be.
Okay. All right. Great. And this is not really radical. This is just the common sense. To me, it's common sense. Anyway, so the last amendment of the Bill of Rights is the one that actually we're going to dive into really, really, really well, just because this has come up in our previous conversation before we started recording today's show, folks, is the 10th Amendment. Paul, go ahead and read the 10th Amendment. We're about a minute away from the break. Go ahead and read it.
All right, there we go. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people.
Okay, so that little line, nor prohibited by it to the states, they're talking about Article 1, Section 9. So actually, it should be, you know, if we clean this up, we have to apply a couple more words. The powers not delegated to the United States by this Constitution, nor prohibited by this Constitution in Article 1, Section 9 to the states, are reserved to the states and the people, respectively.
Right.
Or, you know, something like that. Because it says, are reserved to the states, respectively, or to the people. But I honestly think that that respectively should be at the end, because I think that we've grown to a point where we recognize that we have two other layers of government, and we need protection from at least two of them, the federal and the state. And right. So our reserve to the states respectively means that the states actually have more power than they really should. Does that make sense? Okay, we're going into break. All right. So we're going into break, and then we're going to literally crack this baby open, and we're going to analyze it to ad nauseum. You know, I don't necessarily want to make a whole show about the Ninth and Tenth Amendments, but sometimes we have to actually examine it. And we're going to examine it in a way that you wouldn't even imagine. So we'll be right back after this. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so welcome back, folks, and again, welcome back, Paul. So, folks, you don't know what Paul and I talked about, and we talked about you, and so your ears are probably burning. I'm just kidding. Prior to the show, we started talking about, because we collectively, Paul, I, and a lot of people that we work with are collectively working against, dare I say, Paul, evil forces.
Okay.
Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Because those who are actually working to confuse, they don't even know that they're a tool. As a matter of fact, I'll even go as far as to say that the devil tries to influence us. And in some ways, we as people, because of our failings, you know, we allow the devil to influence us, whether it be, you know, things that are, you know, health concerning, whether they're things that are, you know, for some people, maybe gambling, moral, it may be, you know, corruption, who knows? But we're all susceptible to the promptings, right? Is that not right, Paul?
Okay.
So,
sure.
And so none of us are perfect. And that means that we are tempted. That means that we do suffer from and do allow, because we don't have the power. I mean, we have some level. I don't want to get into the religious side of this, but bottom line, we allow ourselves, you know, some degree of temptation. And so as we plow forward, and we're dealing with people that really want to do the right thing, because I'm going to tell you, folks, that we have a lot of good friends and good people in the Convention of States movement. We have a lot of good friends and good people in the anti-Convention of State movement, such as the John Birch Society, the 10th Amendment Center, and these other people that I call that kind of fall into the group of the nullifiers, or the anti-conventionites, because the nullifiers believe that they have, you know, that the single state nullification is the way to go, and that's what they propose as the solution. Right, Paul?
Right.
And so, and again, if you look at the John Birch Society, the 10th Amendment Center, and others, I even think Eagles Forum, to a degree, and there are members of the Constitution Party that call for nullification. Is that not correct?
I don't know. I don't hear that so much. That's possible, but when I hear them, I try to correct it.
Yeah. I get that. I'm not saying that it is the official position of the Constitution Party.
It's not.
It's not the official position of the Independent American Party or the Eagle. Well, actually, it is kind of become, because I've heard Eagle Forum speakers actually use that. That term, that single state nullification, that states need to start nullifying. And so, and again, I told you we're going to really dive into this. So we've got the conventionites and the anti-conventionites, which is a bunch of different conservative organizations that have that are now clinging to the concept of single state nullification. Then we have a third group, and this is the group that I consider the most nefarious group of them all. And Paul, you agree, right? Paul?
Sorry.
Paul? Yeah, it's okay. You probably muted yourself, but you agree, correct?
Yes, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. And these are the folks we've actually had on. I've interviewed one of the, I wouldn't say leaders, but he kind of goes around and briefs people. So he is a leader that talks and tries to sell people on this concept of a jural assembly. And I will kind of lump them all into, you know, if I could, I would probably lump them all into what I would call the, let's just say, liberty-minded people that are attracted to a sovereign citizen movement, the assemblies movement, Anna von Ritz movement, the nationalist sovereign, whatever their name is, because there's a lot of different organizations that people have taken this concept, and they've all, I found probably 20 different groups easily, and there's probably a lot more than that that are getting organized in different counties and states. Mm-hmm. And folks, this is the most nefarious group. And the reason why this is the most nefarious group is because they're convincing people that the problem is the Constitution. They're convincing people that the Constitution is an illegitimate document. Now, I've warned the John Birchers from going around and claiming that the Constitutional Convention was a runaway convention, because that opens the door to it makes people question its legitimacy. Right, wrong, or indifferent, they are wrong. Right, wrong, or indifferent, it comes down to whether the states legitimately had the authority to do what they did, and they did. And we've had this conversation where I believe we can actually prove academically that what happened at the Constitutional Convention was well within the delegates' rights, and that the whole system was, I'll say, sanctioned and inspired by the divine hand of providence. So when we have a group of people out there that are actually calling for and building upon what the John Birchers are and these other groups that claim that was a runaway convention, then that only gives these people ammo to say, see, that Constitution is a problem. And they start making these assertions, and correct me if I'm wrong, some of the assertions are that at the very beginning we started paying tribute to the king because we were pulled back under the king, under the Commonwealth of Britain, by some secret,
sure.
Right?
Sure. And some of the other assertions were that the Constitution was archived by the Corporation Act, by the 1871 Corporation Act. That's one that I hear very frequently, that it's not legitimate because it was turned into a corporation.
Right. And then they point to the 14th Amendment as the whole source of that, which is all wrong. I mean, they're misleading people on all sorts of lies without truly proving. Because one of the other things, and I was on another radio show just recently that broadcast out of Kansas and a couple of other places, and on that radio show, you know, there's this assertion that's coming from these same different various groups that the United States was bankrupt in 1861. Have you heard that, Paul?
I've heard that. I haven't seen the proof of it.
No. So there's no, I've yet to find any proof that substantiates a lot of these outrageous claims. You know, and they may have, you know, some documents that somebody created, and they may have some oration with some things that they try to point to. You know, like here, I'll give you a good one. The Congressional Record of 1967, where a bunch of Democrats got up and lied about the 14th Amendment being illegitimate. And they put that into the Congressional Record, and conservatives and Republicans today are using what the Democrats, you know, fallaciously put in to the Constitutional Record, I should say the Congressional Record of 1967, saying this is the truth.
Well, the problem with that, GR, is because it's in the congressional record. It's perceived as truth without any backing.
But they don't
that's unfortunate.
Right, but see, here's the thing. They don't actually go back to the congressional record of the 14th Amendment and actually clarify what that 14th Amendment did and then actually do the due diligence in proving that the 14th Amendment was actually ratified. And so I'm looking forward to the day when I get a chance to do a follow-up interview. And actually, there may be a possibility that I'm really bad with names. I believe it's Angeline, and she's the host of, I think, the Truth Seekers. And I may actually have her come on to when we dive into the 14th Amendment. But my point is, folks, when I dive into the 14th Amendment this year, we're going to actually go through the 14th Amendment. And I'm going to give you the initial definitions of every part of this so that you can see how it started and throughout this process, what it ended up to becoming in the 14th Amendment. We're also going to go through the ratification debates, or not the debates, the ratification process and roll call. When did each state ratify it? And based on the whole concept, based on the whole premise, and actually supported by the southern states, how they seceded, they left the Union. What really happened was truly unconstitutional by Lincoln, who didn't know any better. You know, I may think badly of this man, but he at least prostrated himself and got right with God and started doing the right thing to winning the war. And I think his mission was done, you know, and God called him home. Right? I mean, you know, when our time is up, that's when we get called home. And so as I look at what he did, he had no authority to do all of this stuff. So we're going to examine the 14th Amendment. But okay, going back to why the 10th Amendment is so critical about this conversation today, because the very first group that I mentioned, the Conventionites, those who were supporting the Article 5 Convention, Paul, what is the problem they're trying to fix? Can you?
Well, that's the issue. I'm not sure they know what the problem is they're trying to fix.
Well, so they got a generic. They basically claim that the only way to get the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution, because they all agree that the federal government is doing things they have no authority to do.
Right.
So in other words, they're basically telling and selling people on the idea, well, the government can't do all of these things, which means what we have to do is we have to convene a convention to get them to do the things that they're supposed to do and stop doing the things that they're not supposed to do. Is that
and
not
they
correct?
Think a convention will fix that?
What's that?
The government is not paying attention to the Constitution, and they think a convention will fix that?
Well, okay, yeah, yes, they really believe that. And they also, do they not also say that the Article 5 Convention is the only thing in the Constitution that actually, you know, calls for compliance of the Constitution? It's the mechanism to get them to comply.
They say that, yes.
Okay, so, folks, now we're going to actually put asunder the Convention of States action, whatever they go by today, and all of, because that's only one group, by the way, Paul. I've actually dealt with some people out of Detroit and other people, other small groups that are not a part of the COS or the COSA, and they are advocates for a Article 5 convention.
Really?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, they, you know, they're strictly wanting one very specific thing, that they want to have a convention to demand term limits. You know, there's these people that truly believe that this one amendment is so critical that they've started this movement. I go, then why are you going down the path of trying to convene a convention? Just
sure.
Get consensus.
Just propose the amendment.
You just propose the amendment to get consensus on it.
Right.
And if you can't get traction at the state level of the state legislatures to do this, then you're doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's a legitimate no-brainer that we, the states, would want this, then that's where you have to start. Because that's how every amendment has been proposed and passed.
Right.
I mean, you know, when you really think about it, And let's count them down. I mean, I'm going to go through this real quick, but we already know the first 11 amendments came from the states, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so
okay. And as a group, a Bill of Rights, that's, you know, maybe that's one action.
So the 12th, right? Yes. So the 12th of Rights, that's 11 amendments in the Bill of Rights plus the 11th Amendment. So that's 12 amendments, correct?
Right.
Okay, so those all came from the states, 1 through 11 and 27. The 12th Amendment came from Congress because it was a fiasco with the Electoral College. Mm-hmm. The 13th Amendment came from, well, now I'm not talking about the original 13th Amendment, the 13th Amendment that actually came from Congress. So that was the second amendment, you know, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude. The 14th Amendment, we know that came from Congress. So that's the second amendment that came from Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we then know that the 15th Amendment, did that come from Congress or did that come from the states?
I believe that came from the states.
Okay, which is a call that the right of the citizen shall not be denied, that, you know, over race. In other words, allowing blacks to vote, demanding that blacks cannot be denied to vote. Did that actually come from the states? I have no evidence of that, so I'm not going to count it. I have to actually research that.
No, you're right. That probably, 15th Amendment, that probably was still in the wake of the Radical Republicans, you think?
Correct. Because it was proposed in 1869, and the Radical Republicans were in office, and it was immediately ratified. So, to me, the whole 15th Amendment proves to me that the 14th Amendment was ratified as well. Because if there was the sentiments of the states, no question, then the reason why the 14th Amendment became such this ominous, oh, did it really ratify, that why they tried to create all of this suspicion, is because it was truly that divine. Only things of the divine nature does the devil want to actually create questions and division and so forth. So let's go to the 16th Amendment. The need to actually spend more money and buy our way into prosperity by taxing income of the mechanism to pay for that was a progressive agenda. But that actually came from Congress and the government at that point. Okay. But the 17th Amendment actually came from the states. So that's the 13th. 13 total amendments that have come from the states so far, right?
Okay.
13.
Okay,
so the 18th Amendment is what? The prohibition of liquors and so forth, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. That came from the states. So that's the 14 in total amendments that have originated from the states. Now, the 19th Amendment, which is basically the right of the citizens shall not be denied to vote on account of sex, that came from the states as well. And as a matter of fact, Wyoming was the first state to actually empower women the right to vote.
I don't even think they waited for this amendment.
No, they didn't. They actually empowered the women to vote. And there were other states that were empowering women to vote as well. So you got to remember that only the Constitution basically says you cannot abridge this. The states already had the power to allow women the right to vote. And so, so here's 15. Now we have 15 out of 28 amendments out there. 15 out of 28, that easily makes it more than half, okay?
Right.
So now we're going to the 20, the one in 26 wasn't accepted. So the 20th Amendment, which this is what really goes over some details of the president, you know, when he's supposed to be inaugurated and all of that. And I don't believe this came from the states. I believe this came from Congress because it was really perfunctory of, you know, the inauguration, all of that. So the 21st Amendment, which is the 18th article, which is basically, this is the repealing of prohibition.
Right.
This came from the states as well. Okay.
Interesting. This is the first time, right, an amendment was repealed, correct?
Correct. They followed the constitutional process. They repealed it, but what didn't happen from the federal government is the federal government didn't dismantle all of the bureaucracy that they created because of the 18th Amendment.
Correct.
Okay. So this is 16, though. We now have, I have 16 fingers up. Don't try to imagine that, folks. So, okay. The 17th Amendment, no person shall be elected to the office of president more than twice. Now, this actually came from, because the states were really in support of this, but actually it did come from Congress.
Wait, did you say 17th?
The 22nd, I mean. The 22nd Amendment. Okay. I said 17, but I was wrong.
Right.
The 22nd Amendment is where, you know, basically it limits the presidency to two terms.
Right.
Okay, the 23rd Amendment, which is the district constituting the seat of government, shall be able to appoint electors and so forth. Kind of, this was the beginning of opening the door for D.C. to become a state. Mm-hmm. And this was proposed in 1960 by the progressives. And it was passed, but this too was a Congress, federal government, because most of the states didn't want to see the District of Columbia really move forward. It was just really more of a progressive movement.
So yeah, why did it pass if most of the states didn't want to see this?
Well, because they were just arguing whether they should be able to choose, you know, because the argument was that the people who live in the District of Columbia do not have the ability to vote for president because they don't have electors. You have to have, the electors are granted to the states. And so it was. This really derived from the District of Columbia and from the Congress. And many of the states said, well, yeah, that kind of is unfair that you have no participation in the presidential election. This actually started opening the doors for the argument of them to become a state, which we're seeing this today.
So I've got a question.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
Because the District of Columbia, because they weren't in a state, dumb question, were they exempt from taxes? Because they're not in the state.
Well, so whatever taxes were basically levied by Congress themselves and or, you know, the unconstitutional government that they created, such as the District of Columbia police, the mayor and all of that, the city council. Let's get back to the county, though, because we're running out of time. The 24th Amendment, the right of the citizens to vote in the primary election and so forth, shall not be abridged or denied because of a payroll or because of a poll tax. You can't abridge voting by poll taxes. That actually came from Congress as well. So we still have 16 out of the 28. The next one, which is the 25th, is about the removal, the resigning of the president and so forth. That came from Congress as well. Mm-hmm. And that was under Lyndon B. Johnson. Apparently his health was questionable. But then the 26th Amendment was the right for 18-year-olds to vote. That becomes our 17th Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
And then the 27th Amendment becomes the 18th, because the 17th Amendment is actually that amendment that came from the Bill of Rights.
Sure, this was the original among the original either first or second. Is the second?
Now I hope I'm not double counting this, but like I said, folks, we have easily 16, 17. Amendments that came from the states. So the majority of all amendments came from the states. Now, this is all about the convention states, and this is what I'm trying to basically, you know, project here, why this is so important. So when we look at the 10th Amendment and the convention of states, they basically say, well, you know, we can't get an amendment passed. That's not true. The states have successfully several times gotten amendments passed. So the argument does not hold water to say that we have to do a convention to do an amendment. The reason why they don't want to actually present amendments is because they realize that their amendments suck. They don't have an amendment to really solve the problem. Why? Because the Constitution already solves their problem. Remember, the key problem is that they're exerting energy and political force and powers that they do not possess. And they say, well, we need to amend the Constitution to fix that. And I am telling you, folks, we just read you what the Constitution says about that. And it is the 10th Amendment. So are they going to just redo a 28th Amendment that reiterates the 10th?
Right.
Because the 10th Amendment says powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states and to the people.
Sure.
So help me out here, folks. Who's being, you know, the convention of state folks and people that are calling for a convention saying we have to do this to get them to comply. We already got the language right there.
Right.
Are we that stupid?
Apparently, if we're asking for a convention of states, maybe we are.
So here's the problem. I really see that the leadership of these organizations really don't care either academically about the Constitution or they're illiterate about the Constitution. Doesn't matter to me. But when you really want to sit down and analyze what they're saying and what they're doing, it's not holding water. And so when they claim that they have to have this convention to enforce the Constitution, we've already got it in the Constitution. And then when they say, well, we have to have this mechanism. Paul, is there a mechanism to enforcing the Constitution?
Well, sure there is.
What is it?
It's the militia.
Well, okay, so yeah, there's that. But is there something in the Constitution that empowers the people to force the federal government and our government into compliance?
Oh, absolutely. It's the First Amendment right of petition.
There you go, folks. How disingenuous are those calling for a convention when they say there's nothing in this Constitution that calls for us their ability or empowers us to enforce it?
Right.
This only proves the illiteracy, and I'm probably insulting, I probably infuriated a lot of people that believe that the convention of states is the only way to go. And I apologize. I've just burst your bubble. Actually, I didn't do it. The Constitution did. Mm-hmm. And the key, here's the key, folks, that the General Assembly and all of these other people that are saying negative things about the 14th Amendment, the final connection of the dot from the oath of office to the First Amendment to hold them accountable, the First Amendment right of petition to hold them accountable to that oath of office, the third connection that actually says if you don't do that, you're ineligible to be in office is in the 14th Amendment, which is precisely why they are all attacking the 14th Amendment. We have less than a minute, Paul. I'm sorry it took me this whole show to go through the 9th and 10th Amendments, but they're that important. Any saving comments? You've got the floor.
GR, it needed to be covered. And I suspected that it would take us a whole show to get through the 9th and 10th Amendments. So I think you did a good job of doing that. Thanks.
Well, you know, I can only say that, you know, the Lord did everything. I'm the guy that's in the woods stating the obvious.
Right.
You know, and I'm so humbled that I have, you know, your help and support, and I'm humbled that all of the people that I work with that, you know, are standing up. Because you know what, folks? I may not say it, but I will say this. That those folks that actually get on board and are working with me, they're not doing it because I told them that I'm right. They have prayed and they have found that this is what the Lord wants. This is not what GR wants. I'm GR Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty.